What is up, guys? Welcome back for another Thursday of Raising Serotonin, and I am so hype, so hype for this episode. This has been a long time coming, but I have Saad here again. He is my amazing pharmacist friend, and he is going to tell us a lot of fun information today. So, what's up, dude?
Hey, how's it going?
Good. So what have you been up to since the last time we've talked? I feel like a lot of things have happened. I feel like the last time you were telling me just like you were starting up getting like just psilocybin out there, and then you were finishing up just some other maybe small projects. And
now
you're kind of, I know you do, or you did a workshop maybe?
Yeah, we do some events. Yeah. So okay. In terms of psilocybin out there, psilocybin education and advocacy, right? We don't provide any psilocybin.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. All good. So, I'm a licensed pharmacist operating out of Pittsburgh. By day, I am a community pharmacy manager. By night, I am an educator and advocate of psychedelics, specifically psilocybin, for supporting positive well-being sustainably. So in terms of some of the things I've been up to, I finally got transferred back to Pittsburgh to manage a pharmacy here. Awesome. I'm not sure if I mentioned, but about a year ago, I was commuting from Pittsburgh to Altoona full-time.
Yeah.
So I was managing a pharmacy out there. It was an amazing experience, great learning opportunity, but I just couldn't keep doing the driving. So that's finally back here in Pittsburgh with the community, with the people. And I'm building out helping support a variety of different projects, building out different things I'm working on. So, you know, I'm the founder of a company called Silo Health. Silo Health, we are promoting psilocybin education, legislation, and integration. I'm also a co-founder of the Psychedelic Pharmacists Association, which is a nonprofit based out of Oregon. We have finally launched our professional membership platform this past December.
Yes,
we have around, I think, 75 or 80 members and growing.
That's amazing.
We have book clubs. We bring on awesome authors to interview them after the book club is done. We have different community educational events. We'll do a lot of cool stuff there. Psychedelic Club of Pittsburgh has been growing strong as well here.
Awesome.
I'm not serving as a leadership position anymore, but I'm an active member in the community. And I think just this past Thursday, we held an event with probably around 30 or 40 people or so to come together and talk about psychedelics.
That's amazing.
Right now, what's going on here in Pennsylvania is House Bill 1959, which is a Psilocybin Services Act. Essentially, it's a bill trying to provide research for veterans, first responders, and their family members to have access to psilocybin under a research context.
Yeah.
The bill is going to be promoting both indoor, outdoor use, individual experiencing, group experiencing, and really wanting to understand the complexity between synthetic psilocybin versus the full fruiting body psilocybin mushrooms. So those are some updates there.
Yeah.
For Silo Health, my company, we're in the process of launching an educational program called the Psilocybin Peer Supporter. This is a role where we're trying to do our best in empowering community-led healing initiatives. So that way people, regardless of clinical background, can at least be safe access points to information exchange and understand how to navigate dose day considerations for anyone that wants to pursue micro to macro dose experiences.
Great.
So it's really a risk reduction project there.
That's amazing, because who knows what we can trust on Google. So
thank
you for doing what you do. And because I know this is a up and coming thing in the mental health world. So it needs to be researched. It needs to be talked about. And I always think of you when this stuff like comes up, because you're the guy I go to for if I have any questions like that.
Any questions, let me know, please.
That's awesome. Well, I'm glad that everything is going really well for you and all the things that are coming up. That's super exciting. Well, I kind of just want to dive into your educating. Let's just educate my listeners on what microdosing is and how it works.
Sure, totally. So microdosing is the process of ingesting what they call sub-perceptual doses of a psychedelic compound. It's common to microdose psilocybin mushrooms, for example, or LSD for a variety of reasons. And I mentioned that it's a sub-perceptual dose. How they quantify this is that you have like a threshold-breaking dose, which is when you actually start perceiving things, whether it be a difference in colors, maybe you feel as though patterns are moving more in your periphery. that's not a microdose. That's when you've, that's more than a microdose. You don't want to be perceiving that.
Yeah, no.
Generally, that dose required to break threshold, you want to take a tenth of that, and that would be what's considered a microdose, or again, a subperceptual dose. Okay. So when it comes to, let's say, dried psilocybin mushrooms, our standard, you know, threshold breaking dose, we can say is between 1 to 2 grams, depending on the person's, you know, biology, neurochemistry. That would be broken down to a microdose being between roughly 0.1 to like 0.2 grams, or 100 to 200 milligrams. Okay. So that's how you can quantify microdosing for psilocybin mushrooms. When it comes to LSD, for example, LSD, generally you have like a tab, which consists of 100 micrograms. You would just take a tenth of that, and that would be, you know, 10 micrograms.
Right. Okay. So this could be a silly question, but is there a difference between the mushroom and LSD?
Not a silly question at all. Yeah, there is a difference. So they're both serotonergic classical psychedelics, being that they act on specifically the serotonin 2A receptor for its potential effects.
Cool.
The difference between the two is that LSD is around double the duration of action than psilocybin is.
Okay.
When in terms of how that has an impact, though, on microdosing, researchers are still trying to best understand that. There's not much research on microdosing as there is on full dose experiences, which we have a lot of research about, you know, dosing and safety with psilocybin and with LSD. But there's not much in terms of microdosing. A lot of it is more self-reported users sharing things from like retrospective surveys. So yeah, there's the difference between the two, though, that have sort of been anecdotally shared, mm-hmm. is that microdosing psilocybin tends to be much more of an internal benefit, if that makes sense. So for example, if someone is like, you know, having some challenges with their mood, or is having some challenges like being, you know, tapping into senses of creativity, then some believe that microdosing psilocybin can help out with that. It serves as like an emotional lubricant to be much more emotionally fluid and be able to be a bit more creative. Whereas users that like to microdose LSD tend to share the same feelings, mm-hmm. but it's mainly used more for focus, versus psilocybin is not really used as much for focus. But at the end of the day, some people microdose one for the other and vice versa. It's still a practice that's being refined right now.
Right. Wow. I literally had no idea. I know that they are like quote unquote drugs that people take. For psychedelic effects. Like, I understand that, but I did not know that it was those like focus versus creativity. Like, I think that's very, very interesting. So can you help describe the relationship between microdosing LSD or psilocybin and its relationship to serotonin?
Sure.
And why that would help your serotonin receptors?
Yeah, totally. So psilocybin is broken down to a compound called psilocin. Psilocin and LSD, they're both active on what's called the serotonin 2A receptor. They also activate and they work alongside different serotonin receptors and other receptors in the body.
Yes.
But specifically the site of action in terms of the psychedelic effect is that serotonin 2A receptor.
Okay.
So the way that it's structured, it's like psilocin, psilocybin, LSD, they are very, very, very similar to how serotonin looks like. Therefore, they bind to these receptors. What happens is that when serotonin 2A gets bound by this compound, whether it be psilocin or LSD, there's a cascade of effects that happens. So what happens here is essentially more glutamate is released throughout the prefrontal cortex, the more complex part of the brain.
Okay.
The reason why it's the cerebral cortex or the prefrontal cortex is because there's more serotonin 2A receptors found in this region of the brain.
That would make sense.
And glutamate is an excitatory neurotransmitter. Psilocybin acts on the serotonin receptors, serotonin and 2A specifically. These receptors then have essentially they spark the release of glutamate, which is that excitatory neuron, to excite other parts of the brain. What they see through fMRI imaging, which is like functional magnetic resonance imaging, which is like live imaging of the brain under the experience. Okay. And is I do want to disclose that this is for macrodoses. So it's not for microdoses, but in terms of the mechanism of action, it would be the same pharmacology, the same side of action, just at a lower dose and a shorter duration of action.
Yeah.
What they see with these imaging is that there's core hubs of the brain that are normally there. And these core hubs of the brain, they can communicate from time to time. They're kind of passive. When a person is under the psychedelic experience, specifically psilocybin in this study, they find that the hubs of the brain are much more interconnected. There's a bunch of crosstalk. Parts of the brain that normally don't talk to each other are now talking to each other. And when it comes to, you know, having new insights, being able to well around someone, well, your perspective on a specific issue at hand, or for example, tapping into creativity or divergent thinking, the psychedelic experience generally is believed to help promote a lot of those concepts through this hyper-dynamic, interconnected state of being in terms of how the brain is operating. And we have neurogenesis, the growth of new neuronal connections happening here.
Yes.
You have neuroplasticity, so the ability for better habit change, habit formation with the intentions you have to really have a big positive impact for potentially a long-lasting change following the experience, whether that be micro or macro dosing.
Wow. That's so, you're just so knowledgeable. It's so cool to like even know that all of this stuff, like the brain, this stuff happens in the brain. So that kind of like does lead me into my next question. Like, can you describe some of the feelings that happen when you do micro or macro dose?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we'll start off with micro dose. We'll just work our way up.
Yeah.
So you have a micro dose, which is about a tenth or so of the threshold breaking experience. So the micro dose, you know, people say that it helps improve their mood, helps with enhancing their focus. It supports creativity and cognitive flexibility. Users experience use a positive mentality, clearer thinking, more energy.
Cool.
An enhanced ability to connect with others is something that I really appreciate about it.
Yeah.
Is the ability to kind of like let your guard down and feel vulnerable and open with others in a respectable way. And then just the ability to be more present. I feel like, you know, being able to tap into flow, whether it be in conversation or your day-to-day routines, is something that people can master over time. But with microdosing, people tend to achieve that flow state a lot more, a lot easier. So those are some reasons why people tend to microdose. Additionally, you know, there are people claim that their sleep is so much better too, or like they're much more in tune or in alignment with their personal like lifestyle goals. So it's just a nice way to help catalyze that transformation that people so desperately want.
Yeah.
So that's the microdosing element to it. When you go up in terms of dosing, you get into, let's say, for example, like a threshold breaking dose, which would be right around 1 gram of mushrooms. Mm-hmm. So this threshold breaking dose, we'll say, around 1 gram is also considered like a museum dose or a concert dose, or what some people also call like a hike a dose. So people like to take a gram and go to the museum. And the reason why is because under the 1 gram experience, in addition to all of those, you know, states of being that I mentioned with the microdosing, you have a lot more introspective thoughts. And additionally, this is where, because you're breaking threshold, it's a lot more perceptual in terms of dosing. So that perception that changes is, you know, again, patterns, you know, are breathing, you know, you might feel as though the contrast of colors is much more prevalent. So reds are more rich in red and blues are more bluey. So the contrast is just like much more saturated. And it's a nice way to kind of just really enjoy creative pieces of art. Philosophical insight can also come up here. A deep respect and appreciation for nature, hence the hike a dose. And then, of course, people that go to, it's considered a concert dose because, you know, people like to go to concerts on this and feel really connected with the musical group, the music itself, and the feeling of the crowd in conjunction with the music that's being played. That feeling of interconnectedness is also there. That's around a 1 gram to 1 to 2 grams could be considered that, under 2 grams generally, but around 1 gram is that type of dosing.
Yeah.
And then when you go up into dosing, that's when you get into your standard tripping experience. So the difference between like this lower dose versus like a quote unquote trip dose, mm-hmm. is that like with the trip dose, you really, really want to prioritize preparation for the experience, having someone there to support you on your dose day. And of course, like having mechanisms in place to integrate the experience. Mm-hmm. All that is important regardless of dose. You know, whether it be microdosing, you should definitely have intentions you should be prepared for. You should have a community to support you. Same thing with these, you know, hike doses or museum concert doses. But in this state of being, you're much more vulnerable to different deep, challenging psychological insights. It could be very enlightening, but they can be very challenging. That's what they call like a bad trip. Additionally, like if you go into it with misinformation, miseducation, a lack of intentions, you can find yourself pretty lost. People claim that, you know, the mushrooms give you what you need to learn, but unfortunately, you know, some people just aren't ready to learn. Yeah. And, you know, it takes time. It takes people a lot of time to work through their previous experiences if they go into it and then end up having a challenging one. So, you know, as cool and exciting and engaging as these, you know, tools are, like, again, they're tools, right? So the same way a hammer is a tool, you can build a house up and it'd be a beautiful house and you have a blast with friends building this house. But then you can also smash your face in and destroy everything and break everything. And it's not good, right?
Not good at all. Right. You're so good. Lucky.
Yeah. So then after that, you get into higher doses and ego dissolution, ego death. But that's pretty crazy. It sounds crazy. But in terms of the long-term beneficial outcomes suggested by Johns Hopkins University, Imperial College of London, that's where they take these quote-unquote like heroic doses or large doses. These research groups use synthetic psilocybin. So they don't use magic mushrooms, but they use the active component in magic mushrooms. They give these participants very high doses. So roughly four-ish grams of magic mushrooms would be equivalent to the 25 milligrams of synthetic psilocybin they use. Wow. And what they're finding is that after a 1 month, 3 month, 6 month, and even up to a 12-month follow-up, after one or two doses of these higher dose, the higher dose psilocybin, they're finding a relief of symptoms associated with anxiety and depression. So
that's kind of like my question. I was going to ask, how many times do you, or because I don't know if dosage would be the right word or times, how many times or how long does it take to get those effects? Like, does it happen immediately or not immediately after your first dosage, or does it happen like one or two times after you are just starting off this journey?
Right. So it depends on the dose. It's very dose dependent. Some people claim that a microdose can heals their anxiety in 1 day. Props to them.
Yeah.
When it comes to navigating this conversation, one important topic to consider is expectations management. So managing expectations, right? Yeah. This isn't a gold, you know, golden bullet or silver bullet or whatever they call it. This isn't like going to heal you, treat you completely with no work involved. It's work. It's a tool, right? You're going to be sore as heck trying to put your house together with this hammer. It's work.
Yes.
So with that said, what the clinical trials did, they usually do a low dose, wait several days, followed up with a high dose. Okay. And then after that, let me back up. They do preparation for many, many hours, build trust with the medical monitors or the quote unquote trip sitters or peer supporters of the dose day. Then they talk about intentions. They talk about, you know, why people are feeling the way they're feeling. Yeah. Generally, these populations are either treatment resistant depression, major depressive disorder, generalized anxiety disorder associated with existential, you know, dread and illness. So it's a pretty, so, you know, really, these are real problems that many people have, and there's many unmet needs associated with these patient populations. So going back to answer your question, you do 1 to 2 doses, mm-hmm. and then after follow-up, again, 3 months, 6 months to a 12-month follow-up, there is statistically significant decreases in depression scores and in anxiety scores. That's without having to take one capsule a day regimen. You know, for those people that do that and that see the results, that's freaking amazing. But for those that don't, that's challenging. You know, we need more options, which is why I'm so passionate about educating and advocating about these, because these are tangible options. These are sustainable options. You know, these are things that people can literally grow in their closet, and you can grow your own medicine to heal your entire community. But again, like, these need to be done so responsibly. And then of course, legality needs to change so that way we can do this the right way.
Right. And so obviously this has positive effects on for your mental health. So are there what are the studies saying, like, are the main effects or that you get from doing this? Is it the relief of anxiety and depression, or do they say like you become more in tune with yourself, or is it just, is it personal?
All the above.
All the above. Okay.
You know, the one cool study out of Johns Hopkins was they correlated the participants that benefited the most are for longer term relief are the ones that had what they call a quote unquote mystical like experience.
Okay.
So the mystical experience is generally associated with like you have elements of mysticism, right? You have elements of God, universal consciousness, you know, being in the, tapping into the metaphysical or the metaverse, as some call it. I like the term that they call oceanic boundlessness. Essentially, it's to me what that means is like the dissolution of boundaries of self and the uploading into like the greater community, and that being everything out there. It's hard to describe this because what they call it is ineffable, like indescribable, right? Yeah. People that try to talk about it,
yeah,
like it's probably one of the funnest things to do is try to talk about it, because everyone's experiences are so different, but then you have similar themes or archetypes that come up, like motifs, yeah, that come up during the experience that people can really relate to and learn from.
Right.
So it's really interesting stuff there.
Do you have any recommendations into going into this experience for someone? Other, obviously the preparation, but just from learning the process as you have been learning it yourself.
100%. Yes. So first, that's not even first. These are all important. So you have
all
this idea. Yeah. You have the idea of set and setting.
Okay.
Set is your mindset going into the experience.
Yep.
Setting is like the physical environment you're in. So ways to optimize your mindset is to get into a meditative routine. Start meditating a little bit. You know, once you have your dose day determined,
mm-hmm,
let's say, okay, and usually people recommend at least 3 weeks of preparation work prior to. So let's say, okay, if today is May 10th, let's go ahead and I want to do May 31st,
okay,
right? Memorial Day, let's do it. So, and again, this is like, none of this is legal advice. None of this is aiding. I'm not supporting any illegal actions. This is just like highly theoretical in a framework where this is legalized or decriminalized. And yes, no illegal activities, please.
Never.
So you set your dose day. Once your dose day is set, that's when the work begins. The work should always be happening. That's when you really need to start taking this seriously.
Yeah.
You optimize your set by getting into some type of meditative routine. Try to find a way to be still. Usually it's not recommended to microdose during the preparation portion of it all,
yeah,
because that can actually upregulate your serotonin receptors and kind of throw your dosing off. So that way the experience itself is less predictable and potentially underwhelming. So generally you want to wash out from microdosing beforehand.
Okay.
It's going to be important that you optimize your set. So the mindsets, that's going to be also developing intentions. Why are you doing this? What do you want to achieve? It's important to understand that these are not expectations, mm-hmm, right? This isn't like, because if you expect so much and then you get something completely different, you might come out of the experience, you know, a bit more, you know, unsettled,
right,
or not having gathered what you want, maybe disappointed. And that's the last thing you want to do.
Yes.
So setting intentions, open-ended intentions, just to be open-minded to whatever the experience has to offer. Setting is going to be, again, that physical environment. So generally, people like to do it out in nature. I think there's a lot of variables, though, when it comes to being out of a controlled environment, which is some of the perks of the clinical trial route. So what they do in the clinical trials is they find like a couch or a bed and they have warm lighting. What happens now is the participant, the person ingesting the compound, will lay on this couch in this bed under a weighted blanket. They usually have blindfolds on,
mm-hmm,
and then they'll put on headphones. And then there are playlists out there specifically for journeying, specifically for these psychedelic experiences.
Awesome.
Johns Hopkins actually has a playlist on Spotify called, I think, Johns Hopkins Playlist for Depression, or like Psilocybin for Depression. And it is a really intense playlist. And so you have the setting. Now it's going to be support. Okay. Who's going to be there to support you? Who's supporting you from beginning to end? So whether that be a close friend, a partner of yours, maybe as a coach, maybe as an actual peer supporter in your community, someone to just like, who wants the best for you, that's willing to support you, and that's able to check up on you and be present for you when you're pursuing your experience. These are also the medical monitors during the clinical trials, or in more the ceremonial First Nation healer context, these are considered like your shamans. But that's a completely different conversation to be had. So then setting support, you also want to have your dosing figured out. So again, if you're going to be pursuing a threshold breaking or psychedelic, like a full blown psychedelic experience, mm-hmm. you want to make sure you're taking the right dose. So that's really dependent on the person. Generally around 2.5 grams is like a standard dose to take. So that's just, again, something else to take into consideration. And then having this integration afterwards, you know, making sure that you're ready to integrate the experience afterwards. That means like journaling about the experience, you're trying to take what you learned from the experience or the insights that happened and tying them into the intentions you set beforehand, and then figuring out what your plan of action is now, right? This is, again, now this is work. This is even more work.
Yeah.
This isn't easy. This isn't like, I mean, I'm sure it can be fun, but like, you know, many times people are in the fetal position crying, you know, but, or they're just laughing. They're tapping into these altered states. And there's a lot of energy there. And it's a very, some participants in these trials call it one of the five most significant experiences of their lives, right? Being equivalent to the death of a parent or the birth of a child. That's to what gravity they share their experience, their dose days to be like. Right. So it's really serious. It's a really serious subject to be had, to be discussed.
With the right intentions and right setting and everything, you obviously, if this is done correctly, you would say, go ahead and do this for your mental health.
Yep. As long as it's legal, that's when you can say, yes, go do this. But until we have that in place, that's what we need to be changing is, you know, talking to our local representatives and say, we need to have a conversation about this. Well, I don't know all the answers. No one knows all the answers, but together, communities can come together and see what makes sense for them and then make rules. You know, that's what law is. It's just the rule of relationships.
Yes.
Like make responsible rules.
And have to try something for those rules to come into place. So that's awesome. So do you have any last words to say about this? Where should my followers find you? Where they want to have more conversations about this? Where should they?
I'll definitely shoot you some links for them to check out.
Cool.
The first one will be silohealth.co, which is my company's website. We are launching that program here soon to be a psilocybin peer supporter. So if you are interested in learning more about what psilocybin is, what those state considerations are, how to attend to your community and your peer, register to get first access to it. Additionally, the Psychedelic Pharmacists Association, we take all members, not just pharmacist members, not just student pharmacist members. So the membership fees are pretty affordable. And if the cost is a barrier, you can find me on LinkedIn, which I can also share that link to.
Send me
and
that.
Then, you know, lastly, just a couple of things. I mean, you know, if you do pursue these experiences, recognize that these tools have been around for millennia, right? They've been around for longer than any pharmaceutical medication. These are mushrooms that have grown out of the ground.
Yes.
People speculate that we actually co-evolved with psychoactive mushrooms, which is what led to the development of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, language, speech. There's a lot of cool things there.
Yep.
And it's a huge, huge, huge just field to dive into. And you can learn so much from, you know, sustainable, it's just like ideas of environmental sustainability, utilizing micro remediation techniques to psycholytic versus psychedelic therapy to, you know, creating treatment centers and wellness centers. And I mean, there's a whole bunch of awesome things coming out, but the most important thing is that people feel comfortable enough to be a part of the conversation, because this conversation is yours, but it's also ours to lose, because once more money comes in, that's when more voices are shunted out. And mm-hmm. then it becomes the same consumer culture, you know, rapid relief, symptom management, you know, bullshit. And this isn't what it's about.
No.
It's about community.
Heal. Like, this is what, like, they're healing medicines out there, and this is one of them. And we want to continue to work towards getting that out there. And I'm so on board for it. And that's why I have you come on here, because, like I said, you're knowledgeable, and like, we need to have these conversations. It's not bad to have these conversations. It's not scary. It's not wrong. It's another form of treatment. And if we can figure out how to make it work legally and the correct ways, then why would we not? Like, I take medicine every single day. What's the difference if there is the same amount of studies, same amount of like legality and all of that? Like, what's the difference?
Right.
So, I really appreciate you coming on and taking the time. I know you're a busy man. Thank you. And everyone, all of Saad's stuff will be in the show notes. And tomorrow I'll post you, or Thursday I'll post you on my story, so everyone can go and find you. But I appreciate you. Thank you so much. Thank you.